Welcome to the Ballast Asset Management 2023 Mid-Year Investor Call. Your speakers today will be Bryan Smith, CEO of SkyPoint Capital Partners, and Reagan Steike, Founder and CIO of Ballast Asset Management and Head PM of Ballast's, the actively managed small/mid-cap value ETF, MGMT. There will be a question and answer session today. If you would like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing star one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to turn the call over to Bryan Smith with SkyPoint Capital. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everyone. Our speaker today is the CIO and founder of Ballast Asset Management, Reagan Steike. Reagan has been actively running this mid-cap value strategy for the last 19 years. Before founding Ballast, Reagan was responsible for launching this mid-cap value strategy at Westwood from 2004 to 2015, where it grew from its infancy to over $3 billion in assets under management. Reagan also launched a sister portfolio in SMidCap Plus, where he managed an additional $1 billion in assets. During his management tenure, the SMid portfolio had a 10-year track record that ranked in the top 10% against its respective peer group. Reagan was also a member of the Portfolio Risk Committee and the Business Management Committee at Westwood. Prior to that, Reagan worked in the investment bank at UBS in their research group as an associate director on the U.S. equity strategy team, and also with Arthur Andersen in the Business Valuation Group. He graduated from the University of Texas at Austin with a BA in economics and is a member of the CFA Institute and Dallas Society of Financial Analysts. Before I turn the call over to Reagan, I wanted to quickly highlight the performance numbers. Since inception, the Ballast actively managed ETF, MGMT, has an annualized return of 14.89% compared to the Russell 2500 Value Index, which returned 8.58% over the same period. Through the second quarter of this year, MGMT has returned 11.31% compared to the Russell 2500 Value Index, which returned 5.83%. With that, I will now turn the call over to Reagan. Reagan, welcome.
Thank you, Bryan. As we start the call, for those of you that don't know me, I was raised in South Texas. My dad was a rancher and a farmer, and I mention that because that's where I really learned about risk and opportunity. I'm reminded of a time when I returned to the ranch after being away and learning about things like marginal pricing and productivity and efficiency, and I was bound and determined to use this newfound knowledge and apply it to our ranch. So if you think about a ranch, down there, we figure we need 3-5 acres per cow to feed them. And so I found this new hybrid Bermuda grass that had a larger leaf that I figured we could drive that down to an acre and a half per cow, so we could effectively double the number of cows on any pasture. So I decided to plow up the pasture. It was about 100 acres, and I waited, and the grass came up, and I had this beautiful, lush, green pasture. And I went and got my dad and was gonna show him this brilliant idea that I had. And he drove up and got out of his pickup truck and walked up to the gate. And as he stared across the pasture, the first words out of his mouth were, "What are you gonna do when it gets dry?" And lo and behold, that summer, we had the worst drought in 30 years. And so we were faced with the decision of, okay, do we supplement the feed with things like hay, which would dramatically drive up the cost, or do we sell off half our herd at what were terrible prices at the time? And I offer that story because I believe it's getting dry. Today, we're faced with a market environment where we've got the end of free money driven by increase in Fed interest rates, obviously. That has also dramatically dried up liquidity in the capital markets, and we've got increased economic uncertainty. All of those things, by the way, are bad for high valuation growth investing. At the same time, if you look at the capital markets, there's increased excitement about all kinds of stories and themes like artificial intelligence and cloud computing, electric vehicles, et cetera. And so we've seen the valuation multiples expand to extraordinarily high levels. I think I read yesterday something like 90% plus of the return on the S&P 500 is directly because of multiple expansion this year. So we've got increased uncertainty, higher rates, and yet the valuation multiples and large cap growth continue to expand. At the same time, if you look at small cap value, they're trading at extraordinarily cheap levels, and especially relative to large cap growth, these are levels that we haven't seen since the dot-com bubble, and before that, the Great Depression. And so, you know, when I mentioned that, I've talked about this for a while now, and I think folks are increasingly sort of onto that, but I often get pushback, and I say, well, yes, Reagan, but aren't small cap companies more risky going into a recession, and small cap value in particular? And the answer is it depends. If you look at the period of time of kind of 06, 07 going into the great financial crisis, the answer was yes. But that was largely a result of the extraordinary outperformance that they had in the prior business cycle. If you look at the periods of time like the dot-com bubble or the Nifty 50, small cap value outperformed both going into and out of the recessions. And so we laid out in our most recent quarterly note that if you look at the period of sort of March of 99 through March of 06, the total return on the S&P was 12%. And the total return of the Russell 2000 value was over 180%. The problem is that the passive indices today are chock full of what we call zombie businesses. And we've written about this a lot, but what we characterize as a zombie business is businesses that don't make money and that they have too much debt and they can't cover their interest payments. Just putting numbers around it, again, we put some of this data in our letter, but at the moment, 38% of the stocks in the Russell 2000 value don't make any money. And so as you look at that cheap PE ratio of 10 times, by the way, it excludes all those companies. And a third of the businesses in the Russell 2000 value didn't cover their interest expense over the last year. So they didn't generate enough money to cover their interest expense. And so we think that those are particularly risky at the moment in a time where obviously it's much harder to borrow money or get new capital to fund your business. And so we're recommending strongly that folks transition from their weight within large cap growth into small cap value, but doing so in a way that takes into consideration those risks. I will be the first to admit that there are periods of time where cheap beta makes all the sense in the world. And I would scream at the top of my lungs today that right now is emphatically not that time. So we're looking for, we recommend that folks focus on businesses that can self-fund their operations and growth, that have little debt, that have extraordinary management teams, and that are not particularly economically sensitive. And so here at Ballast, that's what we do every day. We're not particularly interested in turnaround stories. We take a very high quality approach to the type of investments that we make. We're looking for businesses that generate significant levels of cash flow, that have rock solid balance sheets, are able to self-fund, extraordinary management teams that are true operators and great allocators of capital. And yeah, to the extent that we do go into a recession, we are extraordinarily confident that the businesses we own will not only survive that recession, but will come out stronger on the other end, because these are management teams, as I said, are extraordinary operators and tend to take advantage of a period of stress of their competitors and are able to gain share and put themselves in a better position coming out. And so one of the things that I've talked about a fair amount over the last year is the amount of idiosyncratic risk in the portfolio today, which is, you know, obviously a fancy way of saying is sort of non-economically sensitive or not correlated I would say that's at the highest level that it's been in the last 19 years, in part because we've been able to find a number of remarkable businesses that are very cheap because they're just largely ignored. And so rather than just keeping this at a high level, I thought I would spend a minute just talking about some of the specific businesses that we bought over the last year, and just kind of lay out the kind of quick investment thesis there. Many of the companies we own, I'm sure you've never heard of. This one, perhaps you have. We bought Bausch & Lomb, which was a spinoff out of a bigger business. And for those that don't know, Bausch & Lomb is a contact lens and solutions business. They've got a huge global presence. They continue to gain market share and increase their margins. As you can imagine, things like solution and contacts, especially with them being more and more consumable these days and not reusable, that's a very steady business, not something we're particularly worried about in any kind of a period of market stress. What's interesting here is that they've got a, within their pipeline, they've got an eye pharmaceutical business where they've got this dry eye product that we think could be several hundred million dollars in incremental revenue as they roll that out. They've got a CEO that has a proven track record of allocating capital and doing incremental acquisitions where they take these sort of tuck-in acquisitions, put them on the broader platform and are really able to leverage those businesses. And they've got this extraordinary opportunity within emerging markets because, and particularly places like India and China, because as their middle class grows and as folks become more financially secure, one of the first things that they're focused on is better eyesight, sort of, so that is driving an enormous opportunity for them over the we'll call it the medium term. Another company we own is another spinoff called Knowles, which manufactures advanced acoustic components, which is a fancy way of saying it's the little pieces that go into things like hearing aids and your iPhone. It's they have the technology that when you say the words to wake up your phone, I can't say them, obviously my phone will do it. That's their technology. And so hearing aids are not particularly economically sensitive. They have dominant share in that business, which gives them pricing power and great margins. And they have this growth business called Precision Devices, which are ceramic capacitors and RF filters. Again, the simple way of thinking about that is that these are components that go into the electronics in extreme temperature environments, so high heat and very cold. So the application for those are things like defense and healthcare. So just as an example, they sell $50,000 of components within the Joint Strike Fighter. They've got about $20,000 of components that go into MRI machines. And so again, these are applications where the customer is super focused on failure, i.e. the components cannot fail. And so they could care less about pricing and more about the components working. And what that means is that obviously Knowles gets to charge a higher price and enjoys extraordinarily high margins in that business. And so what we think we'll see over time is the margins of the overall business continue to go up. And so what's interesting about both of these is that they're businesses that largely are undercovered within the market. There's some reasons that behind that in terms of research coverage that I'm happy to get into. Both of these happen to be spin outs, and so that's one of the reasons. And they trade at significant discounts. Bausch & Lomb trades at a 30% discount to its peers. And so we think that the business can grow much faster than the market, and that there's opportunity for multiple expansion there. Yeah, a couple of others that I'll just offer and talked about before, company called Compass Minerals that mines salt, the primary application used on roads in the winter, and they have a fire retardant business. So think of the red dust that you drop out of an airplane on wildfires. What's interesting about this business, outside of that being very steady, is they've sorted out how to extract lithium out of the they call it the tailings, which is the material you throw away after you mine the road salt. And they've sold 80% of that, 40% going to Ford for electric batteries for their electric vehicles. We own another business called BioCirrus that has a soybean and wheat seed that is 50% more efficient at absorbing fertilizer. And they have partnered with Syngenta. So Syngenta and Monsanto are the two largest global suppliers of seed technology. And so Syngenta is going to commercialize it globally for them. And they worked with a university to take the genetic characteristics of a sunflower plant, which are very drought tolerant, and apply that to wheat and soybean seeds. And they had their first year of a crop being planted down in Argentina using this technology, and were able to show a yield pickup of greater than 30%, which exceeded their sort of laboratory test empirically. And so we think that that is a remarkably big opportunity globally. So I'll stop there. We can talk about more if folks have questions, but the point is that all, each of these businesses are extraordinary businesses, and I don't care particularly what the Fed does with interest rates, what inflation does, what the economy does, you know, how you know, whether wars break out. These businesses may or may not succeed, but it won't have anything to do largely with the economy or those things that we can't control. I'll say quickly before opening it up to questions, the things speak to what we're not investing in and avoiding. Any banks is first and foremost. We wrote a white paper on this earlier this year. We still think there's significant risk there. Businesses that depend on consumers spending a bunch of money on their credit cards, that's not something that we're interested in right now. Deep cyclicals, especially those with a lot of debt. Companies with negative earnings, companies, stocks that trade at excessive multiples, businesses that are reliant on the capital markets to fund their operations. All of those things we think are particularly risky at the moment. And figure that a big part of our job is just not owning that and avoiding that risk. And, you know, compounding is a beautiful thing. It works best when you don't have those big down years. And that is what our sole focus is on, owning super high quality businesses, buying them at very attractive price points, and allowing that to compound as small businesses become large businesses. And we think that that's a sweet spot of the market cap spectrum that we play in. And there's a lot of inefficiency in this space that allows us to do that. So I want to pause and open it up for any questions that y'all might have.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your telephone keypad. You may remove yourself from the queue at any time by pressing star two. Once again, that is star one to ask a question. We will pause for a moment to allow questions to queue.
Reagan, while we're waiting for questions, can you just quickly speak of kind of what the current PE ratio is of the fund and how that compares to periods during COVID and other periods of distress and kind of the disparity there?
Sure. So I'll talk to both valuation and sort of the reward, the risk reward that we look at. So I guess in the second quarter, the PE was just over 10 times. That is the lowest it has been since we've managed the strategy. And, you know, COVID was close to that. You know, earnings got affected a little bit. And so when we look at the reward to risk ratio, as we call it, upside to downside, we measure that for every stock that we own. And so we look at the risk and the downside and then the upside for every stock, and we aggregate that for the portfolio as a whole. We've done that, you know, since the inception. And I can tell you that is over 5-1 at the moment. So the upside is 5 times the downside. That we touched on briefly during March and April of COVID, but that's the highest level that it's been, again, except for that since we started the strategy.
Got it. Thank you.
Just a reminder, to ask a question, please press star one. We do have a question from Kurt Volding with Commerce Advisors.
Yeah, thank you. So wanted to see if you give a couple metrics on the portfolio, like kind of what are the top 10 or, you know, top 15 positions make up of the total portfolio? And then also if you have a metric on the free cash flow yield of the portfolio, just to give us an idea kind of where that falls out.
Sure. If you'll give me 1 second, I'm trying to pull up that number on the percent of the top 10 holdings. If I recall, it's around 35 or 40%. Thinking about it, I may need to follow up with the exact number.
No, I'm just kind of curious as the general range.
Right, right. Which we that's about average for us. We have a handful of businesses that are a little bigger than they normally are, just because the thesis tends to be playing out quite well. And one of the reasons that we actually named it SMID, it's actually a small cap strategy where we allow our winners to run when we're right. And so we've had a few of those businesses that are playing out quite well. And in terms of free cash flow yield, so the free cash flow, the enterprise value is 9.1, at least it was at the end of the second quarter. And just to give you an idea, on the Russell 2000 value, that was 3.6 at the end of the quarter.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We have no further questions in the queue at this time. I would now like to turn the call back over to today's speakers.
Well, thank you very much, everyone, for joining the call. We will be circulating a replay of the call out in the next few days. If you have any additional questions or would like to speak to Reagan on other details, please let us know, and we're happy to set the call up. Reagan, thank you very much, and appreciate all the hard work and that you and the team have done. Great performance year to date, and look for continued success.
You bet. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
This concludes the Ballast Asset Management 2023 Mid-Year Investor Call. Thank you.